Olatunji's first record, Drums of Passion, recorded nearly 40 years ago, remains a classic to this day, having sold over 5 million copies. Baba will be laid to rest in his native village of Ajido, Nigeria. For FSRN, I am Ian Forrest.
This is Free Speech Radio News. I'm Deepa Fernandez. This is Free Speech Radio News for Tuesday, April 29, 2003. I'm Deepa Fernandez. As SARS panic sweeps the world, there are those who claim the outbreak is being manipulated for other means.
It's set on auto repeat. So we can hear the news for the whole rest of the night if that's what people want.
Police Iraq, and over 1,000.
But let's not.
Hey, this is Peaches, and you're listening to WUSB Radio Free Long Island.
The end of evening prayers. Most were students protesting against the protesters being treated at Fallujah Hospital deny this, claiming that
I think I'll just leave this playing. So the beauty of computers is that you can just leave them doing things, and they don't mind. But eventually, at some point tonight, somebody's going to try to play something from the computer, and they'll hear the news. Which will never stop. We're not hearing the news on this program, though, although we might be talking about the news. That's entirely possible, because we do things like that. This is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour or so. And as always, your phone calls are most welcome here at this radio station. Yes, the telephone number is 631-632-WUSB. That's area code 631-632-9872. And no, the lines are not busy. You can always get through to us. Because the lines, for some reason, at this particular radio program never seem to fill up. I don't know why that is. Although, you know, during Pledge Drive, we did very well. Very happy to see a good response there. But people, please don't be shy. Any issue you have that you want to discuss, this is the place to do it. And I have all kinds of issues, as you may know. Always something on my mind to complain about. Well, like right now, for instance, it's 95 degrees in here, so I can complain about that. That's how we know it's... spring has started to arrive when the temperature shoots way up in the WUSB studios. That's a long-standing tradition. What's been going on? All kinds of things have been happening this week, as always, in this exciting world of ours. You just heard Free Speech Radio News, so you've gotten one taste of it, but there's many other things that that you may have heard of that maybe you can share with us as well. Let's see. I've got a whole lot of... a whole lot of little news stories here that I'd like to delve into at some point. Some involving the situation overseas, some involving the situation right here at home. All of it eye-opening and a revelation of some sorts to various people. Okay, how about this? Stupidity Department. Yes, that's us. From the Associated Press, a teacher was suspended for... get this, showing part of an R-rated movie in class. Yeah. It wasn't even the R-rated parts that the teacher was showing. It was excerpt from a film that had R-rated parts. Yeah. According to Associated Press, this comes out of Fort Pierce, Florida. Usually it's the students who get suspended for not asking permission. A high school English teacher was suspended for 3 days after showing a class portions of the R-rated movie without the okay from administrators or parents. And you'll never guess what the film was. Well, we'll tell you in a second. Teacher Stephen McGee did not show any nudity or parts of the movie that prompted the R rating, but he should have sought approval before showing any movie rated anything other than G. As in G-Wish. G, no, G-Wiz. G, gosh, I don't know. G. Assistant Principal Terry Davis said this to the Associated Press. Nobody should show a film other than rated G. That's what, Disney? You know, some animated things by Disney. That's about it, isn't it? Anyway, Stephen McGee's English Honors Class. English Honors Class. Viewed the first 20 minutes of the film as part of its study of the novel Dracula. That's right, it was the movie Dracula. The first 20 minutes. In a disciplinary letter, school superintendent Bill Vogel said teachers are required to protect students' physical and mental... I'm sorry, I just have a problem with this. Students' physical and mental health. Yeah, the first 20 minutes of Dracula, that's really... That's gonna be the thing that drives people crazy here. If you can just get through the door of a high school without being shot at or attacked in various ways. Seeing first 20 minutes of a movie, that's really going to do it. Anyway, the content of this video is inappropriate and unacceptable for the classroom. McGee, a second-year teacher in the district, being treated like a second-year student, was also reprimanded in February for asking questions on a test that referred to a blonde babe. Okay, as a classroom disturbance. I'm not quite sure where this is going. The students said the questions offended them. Well, that's the story out of Florida. That's the latest in United States education. Everyone getting offended. Everyone getting upset and miffed. God. I mean, you know, I can think back on things that happened in high school. Things that, you know, I read that, yeah, maybe they offended me. Maybe some questions offended me. Maybe some attitudes offended me. But, you know, you get by it. You deal with it. You fight back in your various ways. Suspending teachers. Okay. Let's move on to something a little bit more nationalistic in scope. How about that? According to the great Attorney General John Ashcroft, illegal immigrants can be held indefinitely without bond if their cases present national security concerns. This order, handed down from Mr. Ashcroft, means aliens will not be released on bond while their cases are decided by immigration judges if the government can show national security issues are involved. Such national security considerations clearly constitute a reasonable foundation for the exercise of my discretion to deny release on bond, Ashcroft said in the 19-page opinion, and that was signed last Friday. It has not been made public, but it's circulating among immigration attorneys and judges. Is that something? He can make this decree and not even make that public, let alone the evidence that they use against these people to hold them without bond indefinitely. I mean, talk about disappearing into the system. You know? People just literally are disappearing. And we don't even know who they are, and most of us don't care. Anyway, the opinion was requested by the Homeland Security Department. Isn't that great? The Homeland Security Department asks John Ashcroft for an opinion. You know? That's like a bank robber, you know, asking, you know, a common street thief, hey, is what I'm doing cool? You know, give me your endorsement. That's what that's like. Unreal. Anyway, the opinion was requested by the Homeland Security Department, which now has authority over most immigration matters after the Board of Immigration Appeals upheld a judge's decision to release Haitian asylum seeker David Joseph on $2,500 bond. The judge and appeals board concluded they did not have authority to deny bond based on the national security concerns cited by the government, which has sought to detain more illegal aliens in the wake of the September 11th terror attacks. And Joseph was among the 216 Haitians who arrived in Miami by boat on October 29th, then leaped from the craft into Biscayne Bay and ran along a major causeway. The scene was captured on live television. So this guy escapes from Haiti and literally runs onto our shores. And And we want to treat that person like a terrorist, somebody who's trying to get to this country, trying to escape from another country. Several federal agencies have opposed release of the Haitians on bond, arguing that national security would be threatened if the release triggered a huge wave of immigrants to attempt to reach U.S. shores. Look at the interpretation here. It's not that this one person poses any particular kind of a threat. It's because if we do this, it'll send a signal to other people. And then we'll have so many people from Haiti showing up that it's going to be a national security concern. I'm not even sure how that's a national security concern. You know, I mean, an entire state could be taken over by Haiti, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't think it would be a national security concern. It might be an exercise in diversity. But now I'm going to get labeled for advocating Haiti annexing part of the United States. Okay, sure, I'll advocate that. Why not? How much worse could it get? Anyway, here's their rationale for national security concern. By overtaxing the already strained Coast Guard, Border Patrol, and other agencies that are busy trying to thwart terror attacks, the national security would be threatened. Yeah, in addition, the State Department has warned that Haiti has become a staging point for non-Haitians considered security threats, including Pakistanis and Palestinians. Gee whiz, I thought they were our friends. Well, Pakistanis at least, right? Aren't they the ones, you know, helping out against this, you know, terroristic threat? Can't keep up with it. And Palestinians, I didn't know Palestinians were all considered to be security threats. I guess that's the Bush way of looking at things. Anyway, if you were, according to the National Coalition of for Haitian Rights, their spokesman, Dina Paul Parks, says if you were lucky enough to get a sympathetic judge, you could potentially get released on bond. Now even that prospect has been taken away. Amazing. Even judges have no authority now. In a story that we followed a couple of weeks ago on Off the Hook, and you might have heard about this in today's news, federal authorities have charged a seventh Portland area person with plotting to aid al-Qaeda and Taliban forces fighting U.S. soldiers a month after the 2001 terrorist attacks. Maher Hawash, a 39-year-old software engineer, was charged Monday with conspiracy to levy war and two counts of conspiring to provide material support to the two groups. He has been in custody as material witness since late March, and this is pretty much the first indication of what he's being charged with. He had been taken by the authorities, and nobody knew why. And they wouldn't say why. And they didn't have to say why, because John Ashcroft said it was okay. Anyway, the Justice Department said Hawash was part of a Portland-based group with six other suspects who have already been charged in the alleged plan. In a nutshell, Hawash was charged as a co-conspirator with the other six, said U.S. District Judge Robert Jones, who's handling the case. Hawash appeared in court Tuesday. Jones scheduled a preliminary hearing or arraignment hearing for Monday. About 50 of Hawash's friends and co-workers at chipmaker Intel gathered outside the court to protest what they called the unfair charges against him. "Mike, we believe in your innocence," read a sign held by Daniel Moss. Hawash's attorney, Stephen House, did not return calls seeking comment. Hawash flew to Hong Kong. Okay, this is where it all began. He flew to Hong Kong on October 24th, 2001, where he joined up with five of the other defendants, Jeffrey Battle, Patrice Ford, Habib Abdullah Al-Sayoub, and brothers Ahmed and Mohammed Bilal, according to the Justice Department. It's probably those last three. They were the troublemakers that went over there with names like that. And that's probably what got the whole thing started. Another suspect, October Martinique Lewis. October. Wow. Never heard anybody named October before. Another suspect stayed in Portland and wired information on more than $2,000 to Battle, her ex-husband, as he tried to join the Taliban. That's according to last year's indictment. Now, these are people that are not Mr. Harwash. He's being accused of being in cahoots with those people. Of the six other suspects, all are in custody except for Al Sayoub, whose whereabouts are unknown. The new complaint charges that Harwash traveled with the other defendants to Western China and to Beijing with the intention of entering Afghanistan. Harwash and the other defendants allegedly stayed at the same hotels in China on at least three occasions. Harwash returned to the United States in November 2001 after failing to enter Afghanistan, the complaint says. He has said the purpose of this trip to China was related to his personal software business. Friends say Harwash is a Palestinian who became a U.S. citizen 15 years ago. He has worked at Intel since 1992, first as an employee and then as a contractor. His friends speculated that he was arrested as agents looked into a 2000 contribution of more than $10,000 that he made to the Global Relief Foundation, an Islamic charity later investigated for possible financial links to terrorism. What a strange case this is. The guy doesn't even go to Afghanistan. He goes to China. He's in the same hotel as other people that apparently were trying to go to Afghanistan. We don't really know for sure. And then he's being investigated for a donation he made to the Global Relief Foundation, which sounds innocuous enough. Well, that's a story we're going to continue following because it's of interest, most definitely. And also, when you're looking at these stories in the newspaper, make sure you notice how much information you're being given as to just what these people are being charged with, what they're supposedly doing in the first place. I mean, here we have a situation where somebody just went to another country. Somebody made a donation. Where is the actual evidence that this person was up to something evil? I don't know. I mean, I have a problem with the whole, what was the guy's name? The guy that was the Taliban person from the United States, John Walker Lind, was that it? Yeah, according to Fox News, he was Johnny Taliban. Oh boy, don't get me started on them. I've got a problem with the way that whole thing was handled. You have a situation where somebody goes to another country, joins up with a bunch of religious zealots, thinking that, you know, he's doing something righteous and moralistic. Okay, you know, so the guy is, you know, into fundamentalism or whatever. That's not a crime. That is not a crime, is it? I don't think it is. The fact that everybody is ignoring, the fact that everybody has ignored, is the Taliban were not at war with the United States when he went over there. In fact, the Taliban are pretty much helped to become the ruling party in Afghanistan before September of 2001. So somebody going over there to join them at that time, before September 2001, was not necessarily going over there to fight the United States. So categorizing somebody as an enemy combatant, it's just not correct. I mean, how could it be? Yeah, the guy was there after the war with the United States started. But, you know, that's where the details start to get really, really murky. Did he willingly go into the fight against the United States? How much did he know about this? I mean, keep in mind, this is somebody who left his home, goes to another country, joins up with a bunch of religious zealots, and then next thing he knows, there's a war with the United States and the people that he's hanging out with. I mean, it must have been, you know, a little confusing to say the least. I don't think any evidence was ever presented that that he was actually involved in fighting against United States people, or that he even knew what was going on. But in any event, none of that ever was discussed. This guy was just seen as a traitor to his country, and yes, he must be put to death. Or if not death, then at least, you know, life in prison. And I think what he wound up getting was something like 20 or 30 years, and I don't know, am I the only one out there, or out here, that thinks maybe he shouldn't be in prison at all? Yeah, I'm sure files are being opened on me right now for for saying this, but it just seems to me like we're rushing to judgment here without any real evidence. I mean, yeah, if the evidence is there, great. But I never heard it. I never heard the evidence. And that seems to be the Bush staple is, well, we're going to tell you what's going on, but we're not going to tell you why. We're not going to give you the evidence. Let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Good, good, good. Listen, I just want to make a quick analogy between this John Walker Lind and Patricia Hearst.
Okay.
She kidnapped by the Symbionese Liberation Army back in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And then wasn't she held captive and then brainwashed and then participated in a bank robbery?
Yeah, that famous picture of her with a machine gun.
What's that?
There's a famous picture of her in a bank with a machine gun.
All right, there you go.
Yeah.
And then just to you know, use your analogy, John Walker Lynn went over there
mm-hmm.
who you know, apparently participated in his religious beliefs, and then he became part of this Taliban, which did take up arms against the United States. This guy signed a confession. He didn't go to trial.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there must be something there. Where there's smoke, there's fire, usually. I mean, I'm as open-minded as the next guy. Don't get
me
wrong.
Right,
but on this one, I think you're dead wrong. I think Walker Lind is a bad guy.
Let me ask you a question. He signed a confession.
Maybe a dumb kid that made a mistake, but you know what? You got to pay for your mistakes, and this was a big one, and this was a doozy.
Okay, but the Taliban, just to set the record straight here, the Taliban did not take up arms against the United States. The Taliban was basically invaded by the United States, and then they fought back.
Oh, you're right. And why were they invaded by the United States for harboring
Osama bin Laden?
Al-Qaeda hierarchy.
Right, for harboring Osama bin Laden, allegedly, who was supposedly in Afghanistan.
Hand these guys over. These are the bad guys. We don't want you. We want them.
Mm-hmm.
And they told, you know, they thumbed their noses at us. So we went in there to get the bad guys.
But the Taliban...
And then they took up arms to defend these bad guys.
Mm-hmm. But the Taliban was not Al-Qaeda.
The Taliban is not Al-Qaeda, but they were funded by Al-Qaeda. They were a puppet regime of Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. You're telling me that Mullah Omar wasn't taking orders from Osama bin Laden?
I don't know. I mean, the evidence has never really been presented. I do know that the Taliban was helped.
I haven't seen any evidence to indicate it hasn't.
I mean, we helped the Taliban get into power in the first place, right?
Rolled out the red carpet for a wealthy Saudi businessman who has decided to take his religious beliefs to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And they rolled out the red carpet for this guy, and they harbored him. And they aided and abetted him. And, the evidence is quite clear. I mean, maybe you don't see the evidence for the other things, but you can look at that big hole in the ground down on lower Manhattan, and that's evidence enough for me to see that Al-Qaeda is a bad lot of people. The Taliban harbored them, protected them, and that's just the way it goes.
Okay, but what does that have to do with this naive kid going over to another country and thinking that he's, living out some kind of dream?
He made a mistake, and I'm not gonna argue with you on that one. But like I said, he's a big boy. You pay for your mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
The Taliban were a bad lot of people, and when we went in there to get the guys we wanted, they defended them with their bodies, with arms. They took up arms against our country, and John Walker Lind was a part of that lot.
Was he a part of that? I mean, was there evidence of him actually taking up arms and fighting against the United States? That's what I'm wondering. You know,
I think it's a pretty good deal.
Uh-huh. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm saying I haven't seen the evidence to prove that he was not simply caught up in you know, the Taliban at that point. He couldn't get out.
My original analogy, where was the evidence to indicate that Patty Hearst was anything other than that?
Was anything other than what?
Was then some mixed up kid who was caught up and brainwashed and caught up in the whole thing.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting analogy. Wasn't she treated that way? I mean, did she serve any time in prison?
Yes, she did. She most certainly did.
How much time did she serve in prison?
I don't really.
Not very. I know she's like a mother and wife now, so she got out obviously.
Less than five years.
Yeah.
Probably less than 5 years. I don't know for sure. You know, don't quote me on it.
Uh huh. I mean, unless there's evidence, clear cut evidence, and I have not seen that this guy was plotting against the United States
in a bank with a machine gun, as opposed to taking up arms against your own country. You know, I think 20 years is a good deal.
Yeah, but you see, I mean, he didn't take up arms against the United States when he went over there. He went over there, and they were still our friends at that point. Maybe friends is a stretch, but they weren't our enemies when he went over there. So how do we know that he wasn't able to get out of that situation once the war started?
You put up your hands, you wave a white flag. You know, you don't combat. You don't
and you get shot by your fellow soldiers. That's what happens to you if you do that.
Well, then there you go. That's the rules.
Uh-huh.
You can't have some rules that you like and some rules you don't like.
I know. My only point is that he did not go over there.
That takes up arms against our country, he should be treated as such.
Yeah, but he did not go over there to take up arms against our country. At least I have not seen any evidence to suggest that.
The conspiracy that I wonder about is who his parents know to get him off the hook like this.
Off the hook?
That's what I want to know.
You think 20 or 30 years is off the hook?
He probably would be in jail for the rest of his life.
I would agree that the guy should be punished severely if, he was somebody who was plotting against the government and, violently and all that kind of thing. Yeah, okay, then you have the evidence. But I never saw the evidence. That's what bothers me.
Okay, agreed. I hear you. That bothers you. But in answer to your question, I don't believe this man should not be in jail. I believe he belongs in jail, and for a lot longer than he's going to do. All right, listen, you have a good night. Take care.
631-632-WUSB is our phone number. I notice we get all these phone calls when people are on the phone, and then they go away. yes, I know it times out. It's annoying, but we'll try to pick it up fast if we see the lights lighting up. So please give us a call. We know those of you out there on the Internet, it takes a little while for the signal to get to you, but we'll still take the call once it comes in. And by the way, when you do call in, let us know where you're calling from, because we like to know that. Yeah, we have yet to get a call from on campus, I think. So if anyone's on campus, I'd really like to hear from you. I mean, the things that are going on in the world are fascinating. And, I walk around this place, and I don't know. It's like the brains have been sucked out of people, I mean, I don't want to generalize, but come on already. Where's the college spirit? And I don't mean, the cheerleading college spirit. I mean, where's the college spirit that, makes people think and pay attention to what's going on in the world and spread information? Where's that? In the height of the war, what do you expect at a college campus? What do you expect? You expect all kinds of, anti-war sentiment. Just because people are questioning authority. That's kind of what college has always been about. You may not agree with it, but it's a fact of life. Any kind of conflict. I remember when Grenada happened, there were protests on campus. There were signs in people's windows. And, I walked around campus when this whole war thing started, and in the Student Activity Center, which is the what's commonly known as the SAC, that's the brand new student gathering place in the middle of campus. And if this were the 1960s or even the 1980s, there would be all kinds of, signs and banners about what's going on in the world. And instead, what's there? Just one big, great, huge American flag. That's it. I mean, how is this different than a mall? Watch the way people walk in a mall. And it's the way they move. It's kind of these not really strides, just kind of moving like you're on an escalator, except you're not. And everyone's sort of walking in the same way. And that's what you see around here now. Mall walking. it's weird, because I know there are people out there that that do care, that have opinions. I think they're afraid to express them, and you should never be afraid to express your opinions. I'm living proof. Look at the opinions I express, and I walk around without a care in the world, because I immediately forget what I say after I say it. There are a couple of good things on campus, though. I'm not going to... of course, this radio station is one of them. Big one of them. There's publications. Looking at a couple of them now, actually. I just picked these up on the way in. Okay, this is great. I mean, the fact that the Stony Brook Press still exists is probably one of the highest points of this campus. Here you go. This is a newspaper that actually talks about what's going on in the world. There's a party in Iraq, Battle of the Century, and of course, Geeks Invade Stony Brook, which is about the Icon Convention. Then you got the other newspaper, which is the Stony Brook Statesman. That's the officially sanctioned paper. What are the headlines here? FSA closes computer corner. Stony Brook entrepreneur opens store. Wow. And then inside, some blame troops for Baghdad museum looting. Okay, so there's some international news there, but it's good to see opinions being expressed. Let's take another phone call. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hey, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
I'm calling from Texas.
Are you really calling from Texas?
Yeah, I'm on the internet.
Oh, good. Good for you.
Yeah, well, you know, you were talking about, you know, the way people on college campuses, you know, don't, you know, protest about different things, and, you know, how everybody looks like, oh, drones in the mall and all that.
That's what I notice around here, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I call those kind of people sheeple.
Ooh, sheeple. I like that.
I go to the slaughter, you know, to be, they don't even know what's going on. They just go by whatever people tell them. You just follow the crowd, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we're encouraged to do that in almost every part of society, whether it's, you know, television, movies, newspapers, colleges, malls. We're just encouraged to, you know, not make waves, not ask questions, not do anything that, you know, that could be taken the wrong way. Or else you might wind up like, you know, this guy, this John Walker Lynn guy, because your actions may not be understood.
Yeah, you stick your head. I mean, you know, it goes the same thing with left wing and right wing, you know, conservative. You stick your head up a little bit, you can get whacked real easy, you know.
So. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, it's a frightening thing. I've been to a bunch of demonstrations, protests in my life, and it's always a bit scary because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if there's going to be violent opposition. You don't know if cops are going to treat you as an enemy. So there's always that fear. You know, it's a minor fear, but it's there nonetheless. And I wonder how many people never get involved because they think it's going to be so much worse than it actually is.
Oh, yeah, it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I notice a lot of people on the left and on the right, but mostly on the left, don't like to argue. If they wind up talking to somebody that disagrees with them, they just kind of cover their ears and say, I'm not gonna listen to this anymore, and walk away. And that's not how you resolve anything. That's not how you reach people.
Well, a lot of people are afraid of sounding stupid also, but sometimes
yeah.
The only way you can, you know, learn anything is to be stupid for a minute or two, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, a lot of people go into things without knowing the facts. You know, you see people at lots of demonstrations that are there because everybody else is, because it's the fashionable thing to do. But if you ask them, you know, for some background, they don't know it. They don't have the facts. And it doesn't really take very much effort to learn about a situation.
Yeah.
Are you involved with anything down there?
Oh, no. Well, I'm kind of probably politically opposite from you.
Uh-huh.
A lot of things I've done, you know, things like different right-wing style protests, like, you know, Bill Clinton, you know, he's from like 30 miles from where I'm at, you know, born, and he would come down here and visit all the time.
Uh-huh.
I really didn't get along with him, and I went to a whole lot of, you know, protest style things when he was out, and, you know, police would, you know, try to push you out to the side and stuff, but that wouldn't be a big deal, but
mm-hmm.
You know, because everybody around here, you know, love Clinton because he's from right here. You know, he's a hometown person.
Wait, you're from Texas, though, right?
Yeah, he's from Hope, Arkansas, where
right.
He was born. That's 30 miles from where I'm at.
Oh, okay, so you're right by the border.
Yeah, I'm right on the border.
Uh-huh. So that goodwill spread over into Texas, eh?
I guess you could call it that.
Wow, how about that?
Yeah.
But you must have a lot of Bush supporters there, too, right?
Well, you know, kind of, you know. I mean, Bush, you know, when he was here in Texas, he was a lot different. You know, he just kind of totally changed when he became president.
Uh-huh.
Now, he was always talking about, you know, he wouldn't want to start a war. You know, he would do things by diplomacy.
Uh-huh.
And then he became president, and he just totally flip-flopped.
Yeah, there's been a bunch of strangeness coming out from D.C., that's for sure. Okay, well, listen, thanks for calling up.
Yeah.
All right, take care. Our phone number is 631-632-WUSB. Country code 1 if you're calling from outside the United States. And speaking of Bush, and speaking of the Stern River Press, they printed a bunch of Bush quotes. Yeah, that's the kind of thing student newspapers should be doing, printing Bush quotes. I mean, that's how much more enlightening and entertaining can you get? All right, let's listen to a couple of things he has to say. The war on terror involves Saddam Hussein because of the nature of Saddam Hussein, the history of Saddam Hussein, and his willingness to terrorize himself. Yeah. Grand Rapids, Michigan, January 29th. and the comment here is, hey, Saddam, listen to that bit of Bush logic and go easy on yourself. Here's another one. When Iraq is liberated, you will be treated, tried, and persecuted as a war criminal. I heard that one. I heard him say that. That was during the State of the Union address, wasn't it? I heard that, and nobody reported on that. He did say persecuted. Okay, how about this one? This is from December 11, 2002. There's only one person who hugs the mothers and the widows, the wives and the kids upon the death of their loved one. Others hug, but having committed the troops, I've got an additional responsibility to hug, and that's me, and I know what it's like. Okay, that's got the phones lit up. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hey, what's happening?
Hey, where are you calling from, Mars?
Shirley, yeah. Long Island, New York.
You're in Long Island.
Verizon.
Well, this is Verizon, all right. Well, you sound very far away, so you have to speak up.
Okay, how's this, better?
It's better, yes.
Okay, you're talking about the high school teacher before?
The guy got suspended for showing a bit of Dracula, yes.
Right, so I wanted to know, I wanted to tell you an experience I had in high school and to get your reaction to this.
Okay, how long ago did this happen?
1979.
Okay, wow. Okay, go ahead.
Days of Freedom. All right, I'm in science class. We're looking at, it's in biology. We're looking at little amoebas underneath the microscope. Some guy in class was bragging that he knows a place that he can buy pot at the school. So the teacher dares him. The teacher actually pulled out a dollar and gave the kid a dollar. So the kid goes out of class, comes back in about 5 minutes with a joint. He takes, in the class, the teacher breaks apart the joint and puts it in some water and starts boiling it. He then takes an eyedropper and he goes around to each of the, students and puts it on the amoeba to see how this would affect those little organisms, like how the extract of the marijuana would do something to it. And this actually happened. I'm not making this up.
What happened to the amoeba?
That I don't remember. I just remember
That's the most important part.
But I just goes to show you that nobody was bothered by this. I'm sure if the administration found out about it, that, there would have been some kind of talking. But back in the days of freedom in the 70s, I don't think he would have got fired. Now, of course, he would have gone to prison for 20,000 years.
Yeah, I think he would have been on national news. I think, he would have been everything that's wrong with society today. Somebody who preys on children and brings drugs into the classroom and... Oh my God! Yeah, you're right. It's totally different. And how many kids in that classroom do you think turned out all warped and crazy because of that event?
None of them.
Yeah, I doubt any of them did either, and they probably learned something.
I'm just glad that I grew up in that time, and I would hate to be a kid now, because you look around campus too, and you see all the people just walk around with cell phones stuck in their ear, and that's all they care about it. They don't really get involved as much as they used to.
Yeah, well, I don't want to generalize about people today, although, what you say about growing up in the 70s, since I grew up in the 70s, too, I never thought I'd be happy to have grown up in the 70s, because back then it seemed really dull and boring. But one thing it wasn't was scary the way it is now, where your rights are basically being trampled upon and you don't really have any rights left. But as far as people today, I think people today are awake and aware, but they don't know what to do. They don't know how to express that, and probably the safest thing, as always, is just to conform.
Right. In some ways, they're afraid, I think.
No, they're very afraid. I just think, there needs to be an outlet, and that's, one of the things we want to do here, but we should do that throughout, every day, is reach out to people and make sure that everyone knows what's happening and nobody's afraid, nobody doesn't express themselves because of a fear of what's going to happen to them.
Well, if I knew that things would turn out the way they are now, if I knew this back in the 70s, I would have committed suicide probably in 1984, because things started to get a little bit worse about then.
Well, that's a good year to pick, but I don't think that's the answer, because I think as long as something is going on and there's a possibility that we can make things better by fighting, it's more or less our obligation to do that. And, there's strength in numbers, and there are a lot of people who have big problems with what's going on.
Right. My advice to kids these days, if they want to see a movie that shows how freedom was when you were a teenager back in the 70s, watch a movie called Dazed and Confused.
That's a great film. That really is. It's Art Linkletter, right? No.
It's one of the... His last name is Linkletter. I forget his first name.
Yeah. It's the guy who did Slackers.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really good film. It's about the 70s, and I think, it does capture quite a bit. I agree with you there.
Should grow up, with freedom and just, all that misadventure and mischief. That's, forget about the cell phones. Get rid of the cell phones. you know, just a little bit of mayhem on campus would, you know, would help. Just a little honest fun here and there, you know.
Yeah, I was hoping somebody would paint the rock since last week. You know, we talked about this big rock that's on the main road, on Nichols Road, outside campus here, that used to be painted every couple of days by students for various reasons, various causes. And it was taken over by the administration, big spotlights put on it, and, you know, some kind of major crime if you deface the rock. I mean, it's a rock, for God's sake, and there's all kinds of fraternity rocks everywhere on campus now. But so far, nobody's taken up the gauntlet yet. Not that I'm specifically advocating that over these airwaves. I'm just saying, you know, something like that is kind of symbolic.
I think there's probably a camera there because there's cameras all over the campus. You're afraid to do anything.
You know, that's a common rumor that there's a camera there, and I've gone and investigated myself. And last time I was there was no camera, just big lights. But you know, what better way to find out if there is a camera? You know.
The last freedom of expression I saw on campus was when somebody wrote the word David Lee in front of Rothquad sign, so it said David Lee Roth, and that was back in the 80s.
Oh, that's brilliant. So you went to Stony Brook?
For a semester.
Uh-huh. Do you remember, it might have been in your time period, there were signs all over campus at one point that said Michael Jackson is ugly.
That I don't remember.
Now, it's not the Michael Jackson that we all know. Everyone thought it was. And keep in mind, this was back in the 70s and 80s. Apparently, this had to do with some math TA or something that ripped off somebody else's assignment and got the credit for it. And it so infuriated this other person that he just spent the rest of his life, everywhere he went, just writing the phrase, Michael Jackson is ugly. You'd see it on train stations on the way to the city. You'd see it everywhere.
I don't remember. I went to Stony Brook in 1984, just for a year, but I had a friend. You know, a friend went there a lot often, so sometimes we still go back to hang around and use the gym and stuff, but I don't remember that, though, Michael Jackson. But.
Uh-huh. Well, did you engage in any kind of mischief while you were here?
Too much to the point that I can't even say about it.
Okay.
There were a couple of things that we did, all non-violent, non-harming people, honest mischief that I would like to tell you about.
Well, maybe at the 20-year mark, the statute of limitations would run out.
Yeah, there was actually some changes in the way people were housed there because of a couple of things that my friend did. But
oh, really?
Maybe I'll think about it. Maybe I'll call next time.
You could always send an anonymous email, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we won't trace it back, we promise.
All right.
Okay, well, keep up the spirit, all right?
Hey, man.
All right, take care. You know, despite the fact that was a lousy connection, that was a great call. So, and I'm sorry to all the people called in during that call, and they all fell off the line now. We had like four calls at the same time. If you get disconnected, and you will get disconnected after a while because the phone company is not what it used to be, they let you ring for a certain amount of time, and they say we're not making any money, so they disconnect you. Just call back, you know, just call back. Let the phone keep ringing. You're not using up any electricity or anything. Just keep at it. And we showed you the trick a couple of weeks ago. If you just want to have the phone ring constantly, you have to transfer yourself from on campus. But we're not going to go through that again. It takes too long to explain. Yes, mischief on campus. I think that's a key to sanity whenever you're going any place. That's an institution, a mental institution such as a university. You kind of have to engage in some mischief just to keep sane. That's really what it's all about. I find that people throughout the world know what I'm talking about. You know, the people who aren't, as one caller put it, sheeple, those people, they understand the concept. Okay, I'll give you an example, because I think I won't get in trouble for this. I hope I won't get in trouble for this. It's 15 minutes to 7. It would take them probably at least 20 minutes to mobilize any kind of security team to intercept me on the way out of here. So I think even if they determine that this is the crime of the century, they won't catch me yet. But it doesn't matter because the message of putting it out is more important than my personal freedom. Yeah, right. Okay, well, here's the situation. This might give you an example of some of the mischief that we were up to back in the day. There was, we have what's known as the North Entrance here. All right, and the North Entrance used to look quite different than it does now. It used to be a bit more rickety. And it was, I think the hill was a little steeper. And they didn't close it at night, it was open all the time. Anyway, as you came down the hill to the, you know, I'm not even sure if there was a traffic light then. Could it be there wasn't a traffic light for a while? Wow. It's hard to imagine places that don't have traffic lights, or, you know, that didn't have traffic lights that now do. You always think a place has a traffic light. But anyway, at the end of this road, as you came down the hill and hit Nichols Road, there was one of these little trenches that they, I guess, is used for rainwater or something. It goes along the side of a road. It's not there anymore. I don't know how they're working the rainwater now. But apparently, those things are called culvert trenches. I didn't know this at the time. I'd never heard the phrase before. But one day, this huge sign showed up. I mean, this was probably one of the biggest signs I'd ever seen. Huge white sign. And it said, caution, culvert trench on right. I mean, it was the most ridiculous, oddest phrase I'd ever heard. You know, culvert trench on right. I mean, I'd never heard the word culvert before. And the fact that somebody had to put up a big warning, a warning so out of proportion to the danger about this culvert trench. I mean, I don't know what it was going to do to you. I guess maybe you drive your car into it or something if you're really stupid. Okay, that was funny in itself, but the real funny part about the sign, and you may have seen this a few times in your travels as you look at various regulatory signs that illiterate people put up, the sign itself was in quotations. Yeah, the whole sign was a big quote. I don't know how those things come about. I guess because someone submits a work order to the people who make the signs, and they put the phrase in quotes, and, you know, some numbskull down there says, they want the quote in the sign, and they print the quote as well. So the beauty about this huge sign was that it had all this white space at the bottom. And so a bunch of us one night, decided to have some fun with this. We came up with a stencil. We made a stencil. And that enabled us to paint onto the sign. And what we did was create a stencil that attributed that quote to somebody. So for the next several years, as long as that sign stayed up, everybody leaving the campus through the north entrance would see a sign that said, caution, culvert trench on right, Sir Isaac Newton, 1789. Now, it was just, you know, something we did for fun. You know, attributing the quote to Sir Isaac Newton. But the really inspirational part about all this was the fact that before long, everybody on campus knew about the Sir Isaac Newton quote. You know, it was ingrained in everybody's head. There's probably people out there now that remember this. And that's when I realized, wow, you know, it doesn't take much effort to really reach people. A simple act of mischief like this. I mean, I don't think anybody died as a result of that. Laughing so hard on the way down the hill that they go right into the culvert trench. No, people didn't drive SUVs back then, so I'm sure nobody got hurt. Okay, so that's it. That's my act of mischief. No, that's one of my acts of mischief, but that's the one I'm gonna cop to tonight. All right, I might need a human shield getting out of here. 631-632-WUSB is our phone number. Let's go back to some Bush quotes from the Steinberg Press. You know, I'm glad this paper is around. I really am. Because, you know, Statesman is basically the campus newspaper, the official one. They have a million pages of advertising and, you know, updates on what days the grass is going to be cut this week or something like that. But the Steinberg Press has got attitude. And I think attitude is what you need to survive, to stay sane. Oh, sure, you might be offended. You might not agree. Deal with it, you know? I see things every day I don't agree with. I see things every day that upset me one way or another. And I'm glad I do. It keeps me awake, keeps me sharp, or as sharp as I can possibly be. Let's see. There's an old saying in Tennessee. This is a Bush quote from September 17th, 2002. There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, you can't get fooled again. Yeah, okay. Let's have one more example of Bush babbling incoherently. August 21st, 2002. I'm a patient man, and when I say I'm a patient man, I mean I'm a patient man. Nothing he, meaning Saddam Hussein, has done has convinced me. I'm confident the Secretary of Defense that he is the kind of fellow that is willing to forego weapons of mass destruction, willing to be a peaceful neighbor, that is, will honor the people, the Iraqi people of all stripes, will values human life. He hasn't convinced me, nor has he convinced my administration. Good evening. You're on the air. Hello? Is anybody there?
Eric.
Yes, go ahead.
Don't mean to get deep on you. First of all, I'm sorry I once again missed your whole 45 minutes of your show.
Sounds like you're on campus.
No, I'm in Selden.
Okay, well, you're close by.
Eric, okay, the deal is, we're making fun of Bush. I just got the last 6 minutes, so I don't know what's been going on, but I just want to say on the Bush thing, you know, let's get down to, like, the most radical analysis, which is that it's, like, the his father's father, was it, dealt with the Germans, or, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when I say dealt with, I mean they were, okay, can you in future shows, if you know, because there's no time left right now, you only have an hour, right? It's every week just for an hour, right?
You have an hour, yeah. It goes by really fast.
Where I'm going with this is the whole thing of the skull and bones, is that what it's called?
Okay.
The Yale?
Yeah, the whole Yale thing.
Right. I mean, that whole thing in terms of connecting it, you know, obviously we will be dismissed as conspiracy theorists, but forget people who will dismiss us. Let's say if we want to build theories so that we can find it acceptable,
uh-huh.
So to what extent do we want to go with the theory of, is it 1,000 families that are, you know, in other words, they don't care about, they've never cared about borders. You know, national borders mean nothing to them.
Mm-hmm.
Or I mean, in other words, that's one piece that sheds light on when people think it's our country against that country. You know, that's why, well, I thought I was saying they dealt with the Germans because they don't, you know, they don't get that they were U.S., they were United States members, and there was a country called Germany. Neither the Germans or the U.S., these people, they don't have borders. You know, that's one notion that would, you could say, is in this analysis of the world situation and people who are controlling things. I know I'm totally not incoherent, but all over the place.
Well, you're all over the place, but that's a sign of a thinking mind.
I appreciate it. Anyway, that's for future shows.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
Bye.
Thanks. Let's have one more Bush quote, just because it feels appropriate now. Let's see, what's a good one here? I understand that the unrest in the Middle East created unrest throughout the region. Yeah, that's good. Okay, here's a better one. My trip to Asia begins here in Japan for an important reason. It begins here because for a century and a half now, America and Japan have formed one of the great and enduring alliances of modern times. From that alliance has come an era of peace in the Pacific. A century and a half, huh? Maybe you're forgetting something that happened about 50 or so years ago. Oh, yes. Okay, how about this guy? Enough about Bush. Enough about Bush. Just after a while, you know, it just gets old. This guy, Rick Santorum. Yeah, he's the latest guy out of Pennsylvania. He says, I have a problem with homosexual acts. Senator Rick Santorum, Republican of Pennsylvania. I have a problem with homosexual... You know, there's some workshops I could probably find for you that will fix your problem or whatever, but... This is basically what this guy said. Can you believe this? This is unbelievable. This is an elected official. Let's see. What's the best part of this quote? He's basically... he says, I have no problem with homosexuality. I have a problem with homosexual acts. Someone ought to tell him that's, you know, part of it. As I would with acts of other, what I would consider to be... acts outside of traditional heterosexual relationships. How do you have no problem with homosexuals if you have a problem with any act outside of heterosexualness? I mean, if this guy even took a second to think about what he was saying, he might not, say it quite like that. That includes a variety of different acts, not just homosexual. I have nothing, absolutely nothing against anyone who's homosexual, except their very being. If that's your orientation, then I accept that, and I have no problem with someone who has other orientations. The question is, do you act upon those orientations? Oh, I see. So homosexuals are fine as long as they don't do anything about it. So it's not the person. It's the person's actions, and you have to separate the person from their actions. And it just went on and on and on. And, of course, he came under fire for that, but a couple of days ago, the White House expressed support for Senator Rick Santorum. The president has confidence in Senator Santorum, both as a senator and as a member of the Senate leadership, White House Press Secretary Ari Fleischer told reporters. Asked about the president's views on homosexuality, Fleischer said a person's sexuality is not a matter that the president concerns himself with, and he judges people on how they act as a whole. Oh, great example of that. Backing somebody up who says something ignorant like this. Who's an elected official. You know, I'm all for ignorance. I'm all for people expressing themselves, but come on already. This is somebody who represents, part of the public. A large number of people in his district are people that he's referring to in this manner, so you have to take exception to that. Okay. We're out of time. Oh, my God, look at that. The clock is... Wait, which clock is right? Okay, that clock is right. We have two clocks in here telling widely different times. I see, because one isn't working at all. It says 10 to 7, and I guess it said 10 to 7 when I walked in. So it was almost right before. How about that? Okay, we're going to close with a song. Speaking of quotes and people getting things wrong, here's how this song is translated. It's by a group called Can. They're a German group. And the song is called Tango Whiskey Man. Here are the lyrics according to a website. Underneath a pool with a rock here, I hear the singing of White Collar Man. He got a huge edge on his head. Call it number 1, 2, 3, 4. He said I'm the greatest thing, although all over the world, all over no one knows it, rather. The world will look at me and I remain separate, cry outside. Now, that same verse was heard by somebody else to say, to leave the boy with the long hair, are you singing rhyme coming? Here come a naturally chosen, call him number one to sleep for. He sings another grip and still, mama, papa, no one knows him. The one way they look at me, I don't lease in the morning crowd stay. And then the rest of it, he'll get a drink to his head, everyone gets to know he's the next to fight. As victory don't get him, when he wins a cup camouflage, when I talk to you, you just sing we're right, the way back. Can you hear me, my friend? Don't break room, wish me luck. And then the chorus is, why don't you dedicate to follow chicks so stupid Saturday afternoon? I know you and where you go, like a stupid guy, stupid guys remain. See you next week.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.